Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment. All right, and welcome to this week's episode of Better Construction. I'm very fortunate this week to have with me Chris Ballard. Chris is the new CEO of Passive House Canada. He's coming to that position with quite a background in public service and within the housing and development industries. And so I'm very excited to hear his thoughts on both the Passive House standard, but also housing in general in Canada. So Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show.
I'm thrilled. It's really good of you to take some time. I know you're relatively new in the position, so you probably have a lot of things going on, I'd imagine.
There's lots to learn, that's for sure, but it's a very exciting job.
Fantastic. So how about you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, kind of a bit about your background and what brought you into kind of high performance, better construction?
Absolutely. Delighted to. So by way of introduction, a bit of my background. I have had extensive work, done extensive work as CEO of consumer advocacy organizations. I was president of, as well as the Public Affairs Association of Canada. So I've had real experience in managing not-for-profits and growing them across the country. Most recently, though, I was Ontario's Minister of Housing and Ontario's Minister of the Environment and Climate Change. And those are the two portfolios that sort of bring together Passive House, we'll say, in that as Minister of Housing, I was always looking for ways to build better buildings, to build affordable buildings. And obviously, as Minister of Environment and Climate Change for Ontario, we were looking at ways of addressing the climate crisis. And when I sat down with the folks from Passive House Canada, what struck me is that checked all the boxes. Passive House standards, to me, represent a straightforward and somewhat simple way of meeting the need, the desire to address climate change through building better buildings by decarbonizing operational aspects of those buildings. And it also addressed the need to build better buildings, buildings that are comfortable, that are healthy, that are resilient in times of a changing climate, and that offer better resilience, as I said, better resilience, but better operating, better maintenance. All these boxes are checked. And what I learned about Passive House as I talked to builders and architects and building scientists and just my own connections in the construction and development industry is that Passive House standards were absolutely the best standards out there. They are measurable. They look at performance outcomes, and so I was easily convinced, frankly, to join this organization. It's very exciting, and I think it is the simplest path forward to addressing a lot of our GHG emission reductions that all sectors, government, industry, consumers, all of us need to engage in if we're going to do something about the climate crisis, if we're going to meet our Paris Accord commitments.
Well, fantastic. That makes a lot of sense to me. Looking back at the kind of two different portfolios that you managed within the government, some people might look at those and think that they were in opposition to each other in some ways, affordable housing and then more efficient, high-performance buildings. How did you reconcile that, and what's kind of your opinion on that?
Well, the aspect of affordability is, and this is a misconception that that is being put to rest, I think, for me, in talking to experts from not just around the world, but right here in North America, where we have similar climates, is that Passive House Canada or Passive House standards do meet the test of affordability, especially if you're looking at long-term operational costs. And this is one of the reasons that social housing organizations are very interested in Passive House standards, because it does offer a significant reduction in operating costs and maintenance costs. And maintenance costs, because if you build to Passive House standards, there is a quality control an inspection process that is exceptionally rigorous, and that you know the product you're getting, you know the building you're getting at the end of the day meets a very high high quality standard. So it makes sense that going forward, maintenance-wise, you're not going to be replacing faulty components or inferior components, or you know, the building envelope isn't going to sit to fail on you months or a few years in. So from a government perspective, from a social housing perspective, this is the way to go. Because they're able to save hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the size of the organization, of course, but hundreds of thousands of dollars in operating costs, in energy. They're able to reinvest that into housing. And they're saving on maintenance costs because they have a really high quality building, and the community is much closer to meeting its greenhouse gas emission standard reductions because they're building to this quality or this standard. So there's more and more evidence from across North America that once you adopt Passive House standards, builders, contractors, developers, and governments get up to speed and learn more about Passive House standards, that the cost to build goes down. We see this, I have examples from American jurisdictions building social housing, for example, where year one Passive House was a bit more expensive, year two Passive House was about the same as traditional build, and by year three, because the builders and contractors understood what was expected, by year three they were actually building passive homes less expensively than they were building traditional buildings. So, you know, affordability, I'm told, is these buildings can cost a little bit more, but long term they save an awful lot of money. So long term affordability, you're way ahead with Passive House standards, and you're meeting your greenhouse gas emissions. And there's no other standard. No other standard out there, as far as I'm concerned, that can give you that level of performance.
Okay, so I can tell obviously that you're quite passionate about this subject, and that's fantastic. And looking back at your past in public service and working for nonprofits, has that always been the plan for you, or when you were younger, when you went to school, what was kind of the path back then, and how has that changed? I'm always fascinated by people's backstories.
Well, in all honesty, right now I'm supposed to be a professor of marine biology.
Okay.
But that didn't work out. A funny thing happened on the way to a marine biology school. I was sidetracked by journalism. So I was a journalist for a number of years before moving into public affairs. But I have a real love of science, a real love of data collection and data-driven decisions. And no, I wasn't one of those kids we all knew in grade 7 or 8 who said they wanted to be Prime Minister of Canada. It was the furthest thing from my mind to ever be an elected official. I spent a lot of time professionally as a public affairs person, working closely with politicians of all different stripes. And I would think to myself that I'm really not interested in doing that job. That's a thankless job. But as things turned out, I got involved with some local initiatives in the town that I live in now, Aurora, and was convinced to run for council. Ran for council, and to my surprise, won my first time out. And then saw that a lot of the issues that municipalities face, and I see this right across the country, a lot of the problems they face or issues they face are easily addressed or can be addressed by a change in provincial legislation. So I ran for provincial legislature as a member of provincial parliament in my community. And I thought, even if I don't win, I want to put these ideas on the table, these issues on the table during the election, so that we can we can better understand, the people of this riding can better understand what the province needs to do. And we were looking at, preservation of green space, intensification legislation, just some real challenges about how development takes place in our small communities, because we felt that we had lost control of development within our own town. We felt that we'd lost control over managing our natural environment, preserving our green spaces, our farmland. So these are some of the things I put on the table. Lo and behold, I was elected as a member of provincial parliament, and then became the Minister of Housing. And then shortly after that, a year after that, became the Minister of Environment and Climate Change. So there was never a clear path for me to get into those positions. It was just that as opportunity arose and my understanding of how do we make change, how do we change our trajectory, how do we address the climate crisis, these are the best ways to do it. And that's why I'm with Passive House Canada today. I knew about as Minister of Environment and Climate Change, I knew about Passive House. I understood the basic concepts. I was not aware of how vigorous Passive House Canada was becoming. But, as minister, I was always looking for simple ways to address solutions. I would have, as minister, people come to me with wonderful ideas for technological solutions. If I would only invest, $10 million here, $5 million there, $50 million here, they could bring me, maybe, in a few years, some technology that would help us address the climate change. But there were never any guarantees, of course, and it was always asking for expenditures of public monies to invest in their ideas. So Passive House, for me, is a very simple solution, one that is tested, one that we don't have to invent. It may be complex to implement because we have a lot of education to do, but it is a simple idea and a very simple thing that governments of all level can do. It also holds wonderful promise for governments and for industry. And the promise is of greater investment, job creation, all of the positive things that can come out of the climate crisis, quite frankly. The positive things, building to Passive House standards can help address the climate crisis, but also can help stimulate investment in the clean tech economy. And this is something where Canada and the provinces and even local municipal jurisdictions, by adopting high performance building standards, by adopting Passive House standards, I think, and working with industry, can really bring on investment in these communities and job creation in these communities. So we need to look at all angles of the climate crisis and better understand how do we deal with it and how do we I hate to say benefit from it, but we might as well put our cards on the table and say, how can we build a stronger economy with the climate crisis, a new economy based on clean tech solutions, on greening solutions that aren't greenwashing? That's a whole other issue that we face out there right now.
I agree. I mean, I think that from an economic standpoint, I know when I started dealing with Passive House in Canada, we had all of one window company locally that made Passive House certified windows. I think now in Canada, if I might be wrong, but I believe there's around seven. So, I mean, these are local businesses that are profiting from building better buildings, through a different method. One thing that we run into a lot, and I think it's partially just the overall climate, political and media climate right now, which is a bigger topic that we don't probably want to get into. But there's a lot of very polarizing topics, and one of which in the construction industry is this idea of high performance construction. I run into people that are 100% for it, and you say Passive House, they're all for it, they get it. And then you run into a lot of people that are like, we already have so many things in our buildings that make them more expensive. how am I supposed to be profitable as a builder? The long-term benefits don't really benefit me. So when you're kind of faced with that type of maybe a little bit more divided audience, what's your approach for rectifying that from, you know, the experience of someone who's had time in governments, which, as we all know, can be rather polarized places?
I think the best way to change people's minds is to have people who are doing their jobs talk to them. So I can give you examples that when I sit in on a trades course, a Passive House Canada trades course, where we're educating framers, project managers, all trades members, and some people are there because they were told they had to be there by the boss. Some people are there because they want to learn more about Passive House Canada. But I can tell you, after a day of instruction, they've all bought into what we're trying to do with Passive House Standards. When they understand, at the end of the day, it's really simple what we're doing. It's quality design and quality building. So I've learned that the best person to change your mind is someone who works in your industry, who, you know, stands by you and swings a hammer, or is a building designer, or works in the building design industry, or is a developer who's having to worry about finance and scheduling and building permits and those kinds of things. It's not going to be me knocking on your door necessarily. So that's why it is so important that all of us who work in this space, the high performance building space, the Passive House Canada space, that we continue to advocate, not with just elected officials, but with others in the industry, to talk about the positive aspects of Passive House Standards, and reiterate that once you have an understanding of Passive House, it is not something, a foreign concept. It is easy. It's easy to implement. It's going to and that it's profitable as well. It can be profitable as well. My greatest fear, Sean, and I say this as a citizen of this country, is that we're not going to meet our greenhouse gas emission targets, that it will be an embarrassing time for us, and we'll be scrambling to meet them as we get really close to the accord deadlines, and that because we're pressed, we will be making the wrong types of decisions as legislators. Whereas, if we revamp our building codes, if we stick with good quality building codes that push for high performance, that push for Passive House Standards, we'll get there, no problem. I guess my fear is, when it comes to investment, is that, I want to see good quality jobs created right here in Canada, in all our provinces. And you spoke about the number of window manufacturers. We're going to need more of them, and we're going to need them in all our major markets. As Toronto moves ahead, as the city of Toronto, the Toronto Community Housing moves ahead with implementing billions of dollars worth of renovations to Passive House Standards, they're going to need hundreds of thousands of windows, for example, doorways. They'll need, tens of thousands of entry systems. I want to see those supplied by a Canadian manufacturer employing Canadians, good paying jobs. I don't want those components brought in from overseas, because it's less expensive. But unless we get industry on board, unless we get manufacturers on board soon, I fear that's what's going to happen. So we need to have that marketplace transformation to make sure that our manufacturers are ready to meet the need of what's happening here in Canada. So that's the high level, quite frankly. And I think I go back to what I said earlier, that we need a planned to meet our greenhouse gas emission targets. We need to decarbonize building, and Passive House Canada, I think, has the simplest and easiest pathway forward. Complex to implement, but when developers talk to developers, when finance people talk to finance people, when construction folks talk to construction folks, and people realize that it's not that difficult to move to a Passive House standard, then we make real change. So my job is to continue to talk to the policy decision makers, so the civil servants, the politicians, and to bring business on board. And I'm quite passionate about that because everything I've done in past, all of my experience in the past, leads me to understand that this is the best pathway forward, that Passive House standards are the best and easiest way to meet our climate change promises.
Okay. One topic that you brought up a few times is finance. Now, if you're, Toronto, City of Toronto, and you own a lot of buildings and you're retrofitting them for Passive House, spending a little bit of extra capital at the beginning to make those Passive House makes a lot of sense because you're the one that's going to be reaping the benefits long term of the energy savings, lower maintenance, etc. One challenge I know that a lot of developers and builders have faced, though, is that people in the finance community don't necessarily understand Passive House or high performance buildings when it comes to mortgage allotments, when it comes to financing, all those different types of topics. Is there anything that Passive House Canada is doing to try and expose the finance community to the standard and to what it actually means for buildings? Or what's your opinion on, how can we get that bridge connected?
Mm-hmm. And I understand, it's more than just convincing government to have improved their building codes. We have to make sure that we're helping the developers. We have to make sure that we're helping tradespeople. Everybody understand Passive House way of doing things. And I do have plans. Being based in Toronto, I am starting the outreach to especially the green impact investors, the other funds that are out there. I can tell you, when I was minister, meeting with banks out of New York City that were looking to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in green, quote unquote, green projects, retrofit, especially renovation projects. There is capital out there that is looking for a place to land. I think one of the things that we can help do is make that connection, at least if nothing more than to make developers and government more aware of where the funds are and who's managing the funds and maybe provide a bit of a bridge so that they can talk to each other. Because these are, there are funds out there and now there are more and more Canadian funds looking to invest long-term into commercial properties where they're looking for this type of investment, green investment, impact investing. They're mandated to put their money into these types of investments. So our job, I think, at Passive House, one of the many things that we need to be doing is identifying who the players are and helping to communicate that and facilitate that. I certainly saw as minister that there was a desire by industry, by the financial industry to search out and to invest in green projects, especially renovation type projects. It's even more sophisticated now. And I think a lot of the big players, big commercial players, are making those connections and finding those sources of funding. Maybe for smaller developers, there could be some help. So this is a role that government can be playing to help facilitate this idea. And this is, a role that I think Passive House, maybe in a smaller way, because we're not a big organization, but we certainly are working in that field of educating and bringing people together. There's another area, when we talk about the cost to build, especially in major centers, one of the things that I like to talk to, have been talking to municipal governments about is, besides adopting Passive House standards for their buildings, their building codes, is to look at, you know, how they can work with these types of developments to expedite permitting, for example, or development approval, for example. Because as every developer will tell you, time is money. If we can, or if governments can facilitate, speed up, if you will, the approvals and the of passive house built buildings, then developers will buy into that. That's one of the fastest ways I think we could help developers, or governments could help developers, by would be by expediting their developments. You know, if you're coming to a city and you have a passive house building, then your permit is expedited. If you're coming with a regular type of building, then you go through the regular channels. And there are examples of this. I know, as Minister of Housing, I worked with a couple of one of my regions to expedite purpose-built rental. And we simply helped cut the red tape. We did not reduce the standard, the building standards. We didn't spend any taxpayers' dollars, actually. We just made it easier for this particular developer to move through town hall and to get the permits they needed to build. And that saved them a lot of money. It made financing much easier for them. I would encourage governments to think about doing the same when it comes to passive house projects.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, there has been some success in Vancouver in certain extents, as well as on the North Shore out here in BC. Passive House itself, I want to talk a little bit about Passive House Canada specifically. Obviously, it started with a few people in BC running some classes, you know, doing some courses, outreach, that type of stuff. It's expanded quite a bit. How about you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about where Passive House Canada is right now and where you guys are planning to go in the next, you know, say 5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you know, Passive House Canada has its roots in British Columbia. Our head office is in Victoria. I've been asked if, since I'm based in Toronto, if I'm going to move the head office to Toronto. And the answer is no. The ancestral roots of Passive House Canada remain here, or are here in BC. And I want to make sure that we continue to acknowledge that. So we're looking at a few things in the coming 3 years. We're looking at continuing to build our base in British Columbia, continuing to make sure that the STEP code is not watered down, is that the high performance building standards remain there, that there's no backsliding, because BC has led the way across the country, and Vancouver, you know, has led the way across the country. So I like to hold Vancouver, Victoria, North Shore up as an example to the rest of Canada about what can be done in using very high standard building performance standards to address greenhouse gas emissions and build better homes. So we'll continue to build our presence in British Columbia. There are more courses, there's more education that we can be offering to the industry and to government. And so we're looking at developing some of the high performance programs. But as while that is going on, Ontario is an immediate focus of our attention. It's one of the reasons that Passive House Canada reached out to me. So I'm continuing to build our presence in Ontario. We have our office established in that province. We have staff in the Toronto area. We'll have more staff in the Toronto area in the weeks ahead, all with a focus on informing, educating, and offering more programs. As I said earlier, we're an advocacy organization primarily, but a lot of our advocacy happens through education. When you have people taking our courses, they generally leave the course very passionate about passive house and talking to their acquaintances and workmates. But we also need to spend time with government. So we have made significant inroads over the past 2 years with the City of Toronto and its agencies. Surrounding communities are very interested in what we're doing. So we have we're able to offer education programs for their staff, for their elected officials. And we have Ottawa, of course, which is just up the road from Toronto. So I'm dividing my time equally, we'll say, between Toronto, Ottawa, and our head office in Victoria. And we're continuing to push and make sure that high-performance building codes are at the forefront of what the Canadian government is putting in play. And working with agencies there to talk to them about things I mentioned earlier about how do we make it easier? How do we make it less expensive to move ahead on high-performance buildings, passive house standard buildings in Canada? What can a federal government, provincial government, municipal governments do to facilitate the adoption of passive house standards and then support development of those buildings? I'd like to see in Ontario, as we... Ontario continues to grow in population. There is some 140,000 people move to the Greater Toronto Hamilton area each and every year. We have to find housing for them. And going forward, that needs to be housing that is high performance, that meets passive house standards, as far as I'm concerned. So there's real challenges in Ontario, but I know that we have the attention of industry. We have the attention of government in order to do that. And certainly more and more municipalities, thanks to the LC3 funding, are starting to think about how they get involved at a municipal level of high-performance buildings. So, I'm receiving calls almost on a daily basis from municipalities asking how Passive House Canada could help them, what advice could we give them, where could we point them to, and happy to do that to the best of our ability. So there's lots to do in Ontario, but it's an emerging market and a rapidly growing market, and as Passive House standards are adopted by municipal governments. And we see more and more social housing projects go ahead. Hamilton's been a huge growth in passive house projects there. It's very exciting to see that community take the lead, that city take the lead. Toronto will very soon surpass virtually every other city in Canada in terms of the number of passive house standard projects underway. And I'm not just talking new build, but also renovations to Interfit standards. And at the same time as we're growing Ontario, we're also growing in Quebec and reaching out to our Quebec counterparts to hopefully by the spring offer education programs en français along with exams so that we can capture that market. I think what we have to understand is that every province is different. Every market is different. And that what works in BC may not work in Quebec, may not work in Ontario. So I have to take my time as CEO to understand what those markets require and what our messaging needs to be in those markets. But at the end of the day, Sean, we don't have a lot of time as a country. We don't have a lot of time as industry or as politicians. We have the ticking clock of climate change in the background. So while I would like to plan for a 5 or 7 year or longer strategy, we don't have the luxury of that time, and that's something that is slowly sinking in, I think. My concern, well, I have many concerns, as I mentioned earlier, that we'll rush to meet our objectives, and in rushing, we will not have the best standards. That we will miss opportunities for investment in Canada and job creation here in Canada. You know, my one of my concerns is a lot of the elected people I'm talking to really are trying to make the best decisions they can make, and are making statements and bringing legislation in that is extremely supportive of what we're trying to do here, only to see it nibbled away at, we'll say, by a few with a vested interest, not to see high performance buildings come in, or not to understand because they don't understand the benefits of high performance buildings. So we have to continually push back against the watering down of standards, and we have to remind politicians or alert politicians and senior decision makers that while they had the best intention with their legislation, going forward, it is being watered down, perhaps without their knowledge. So a lot of challenges out there, a lot of issues I've dealt with as town councillor, as member of provincial parliament, and certainly as a minister. But I know we can meet all of these challenges, and I know that Canada can meet its Paris Accord commitments. And I know that we can create quite a thriving industry here in Canada around passive house components and knowledge, and that we can export that knowledge and those components around the world, because that's something Canada is good at, capitalizing on our knowledge. We just have to keep pushing forward on this. We have to keep pushing the ideas forward. And I'm happy to be the CEO of Passive House Canada and to be doing that.
Well, Chris, I certainly am confident that yourself and the members of your team are the right people to be doing that, and certainly appreciative, as all of us in the kind of better construction, high performance side of the industry are, of all the work that Passive House Canada does. I want to take a minute to say thank you very much for being on the show today. I know you've got a busy schedule, but I appreciate you taking the time to do that. For the listeners, I will put links to Passive House Canada's website in all of the social media posts. Definitely encourage you to go and check out the courses that are coming up. I know there's a tradesperson course coming up in Toronto soon, and a number of different courses happening all across the country. So take a look at those. And Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Sean. And thank you very much to you and your industry for the support of high performance buildings. It's noted.
Well, we definitely are happy to be involved.